Hello, and welcome to your talking newspaper for St. Albans, Harpenden, and the surrounding area. I'm Bill, and this is the Red Satin programme for Saturday, the 20th of July, 2024. I do hope you're all well and beginning to enjoy the summer. The music this week is Summer Rain, from guitarist Jeremy North. I think his technique of overdubbing his own guitar parts is particularly effective on this track. He's kindly given permission for us to use it in our programme, and I will, of course, play it in full at the end. This week, as usual, we have the news stories and radio listings, and then a rundown of television programmes that offer audio description. In 10 Today, we start the second series of gentle exercise routines to help keep you active at home. And this will be followed by Today in History, where we hear about events that took place this week in the past. Rupert Evershed's Nature Notes from July 2021 are next, and then we have a couple of articles from Hearts Life magazine. The first is an account by cyclist and BBC journalist Steve Silk of his journey by bike up the Great North Road. Traversed by royals, rebels and highwaymen, it was once the backbone of Britain, and the author cycled its length to discover its treasures and history. We then have a piece with the intriguing title of Poet's Corner, a country garden near Weed Hampstead where poetry and gardening come together. With the Olympic Games soon to start in Paris, Alistair tells the remarkable story of Eric Liddell, who competed 100 years ago in the 1924 Paris Olympics. We start with the news, and our readers this week are Elizabeth, Bob, Penny, and Jenny.
Good morning, I'm Jenny, and my first story today is a rather sad one. School pays tribute to its former pupils, Sister Louise and Hannah killed at home. A school in St. Albans has paid tribute to former students Hannah and Louise Hunt, who were both killed in a triple murder in Bushey. Louise, 25, Hannah, 28, and their mother, Carol, 61, the family of racing presenter John Hunt, were found seriously injured at a home in Ashlyn Close after being attacked with a crossbow last Tuesday. The suspected killer, Kyle Clifford, 26, was found with serious injuries in Enfield's Lavender Hill Cemetery the following afternoon. St. Albans School, Loretto College, has paid tribute to former students, Hannah and Louise, in a short statement on social media. It read, "Today we are mourning the loss of two of our ex-students, Hannah and Louise, along with their mother, Carol. We extend our thoughts and prayers to the family during this most difficult time. As a Loretto community, they will always hold a place in our heart. May they rest in peace." Following the tragic events of last week, the family released a short statement on Saturday. Husband and father John Hunt and daughter and sister Amy said they were devastated following the triple murder. "The devastation that we are experiencing cannot be put into words," they said. "We would like to thank people for their kind messages and for the support we have received in recent days. These have provided great comfort to us, for which we are very grateful. As you can imagine, this is an extremely difficult time for us, and we need time and space to come to terms with what has happened and start the grieving process. While this is happening, we would ask that our privacy and that of our wider family and relations be respected at this time." A 26-year-old man from Enfield has been arrested in connection with the triple murder. He remains in hospital at this time. And there's a beautiful photograph, both of Louise and of Hannah.
Hello, this is Penny. Funding approved for plans to expand secondary school. County councillors have approved a financial package that could permanently increase the number of places available at Beaumont School in St Albans. Demand for places at the secondary school is so high that this year they received 1,285 Year 7 applications, more than 6 applications for every place available. As a result, those pupils who start in September will live within 660 metres of the Austin Way School. Although Beaumont can officially offer just 210 Year 7 places, since 2022 it's been asked to take an extra class of 30 new pupils on a temporary basis. The plans, approved by a meeting of the County Council's Cabinet last Tuesday, are designed to enable a permanent increase in the number of Year 7 places available, from 210 a year to 240. In making the case for the capital funding, Councillor Caroline Clapper highlighted the high demand for places in this specific part of St Albans, as well as the $28 million that had already been invested to increase capacity at schools in St Albans. She pointed to a new housing development, as well as numbers of residents relocating to the area from Hong Kong and Ukraine, and said higher demand, specifically in the area around Beaumont School, had led to this localised pressure. She said the funding would enable the county to enter into a funding agreement with the Department for Education. That's because the DfE is already delivering a rebuilding project at the school designed to invest in the overall site. The additional funding will enable the expansion of the school to go ahead, alongside existing plans to reprovision of facilities. Details of funding required to provide the additional facilities at the site have not been published and were not discussed at the meeting. But it was agreed that it could include up to £51,921 of funding from Section 106 agreements, which are funds collected from developers in order to mitigate the impact of a particular development on an area. At the meeting, Executive Member for Resources and Performance, Councillor Bob Deering, said the financial situation at the council was a permanent challenge, but pointing to the high proportion of the county schools judged to be good or outstanding, he said they had been pleased to find the funding. This is a county at which you can send your child to school and be absolutely proud of the school the child will go to, said Councillor Deering. So everything to do with finance here is hard work, but we were very pleased to find the money. At the meeting, the Cabinet authorised the Council's Director of Finance to agree the terms of the financial contribution for the project. Ultimately, a decision on whether the school could expand on a permanent basis would be made by the Department for Education's Regional Director.
Splash Park opens ahead of summer holidays. With the summer holidays right around the corner, Verulamium Splash Park has opened for another year. Always a signifier of summer in St Albans, the park opened on Monday and will be open every day until September the 8th. With most schools breaking up for the long 6 weeks holiday at the end of this week, the park gives children a chance to enjoy the outdoors and hopefully soak up some good weather. Run by Everyone Active and St Albans City and District Council, the park boasts a variety of fountains and other water features for children and their families. Families will be hoping for an upturn in the weather after a soggy start to the summer, but the forecast for this week is looking up, with highs of 28 degrees on Friday, just as schools close their gates for the summer. The park is open from 10 a.m. until 6 p.m. each day, with no need to book in advance.
Entrepreneur makes final of awards. A Harpenden entrepreneur has been made a finalist in the Best Businesswoman Awards 2024. Kate Cherry from the Athena Network has been shortlisted in the Best Networking Groups category. The Athena Network provides business networking and training for female business owners and professionals in St Albans, Harpenden and Welland Hatfield, as well as across the country. Kate said, I'm so proud of this recognition. I have run the Athena Network in Hertfordshire and Bedfordshire since 2017, after leaving my corporate commuter life behind 10 years ago. I always aim to deliver the best for our members' business and personal growth, and I'm so thankful for their kind words and testimonials. The awards will be held at the Hilton Sisson Park in London on October the 11th.
Delight, a stem cell donor found. Leukemia patient Ben, 24, has transplant. A St Albans man with a rare form of blood cancer is on the road to recovery after a stem cell transplant that looks set to save his life. Ben Collins, 24, faced an anxious race against time after being diagnosed with acute lymphoblastic leukemia on Christmas Day last year. Needing a stem cell donor for life-saving treatment, his family's hopes were dashed when a potential donor in Germany fell through at the last minute. But 2 weeks ago, things changed when it was revealed that another donor from Germany had been identified. After the heartbreak of last time, Ben and his family kept the news private, but this time there was to be no last-minute despair. Ben had the transplant on Thursday, July 4th, and is now recovering in hospital. His mum, Katrina, said, It was a very strange feeling on the night. It only took half an hour, so no time at all. Don't know what we really expected, but his dad, his girlfriend Emma and myself sat in silence as it went into his arm. The stress of waiting for it all to happen, and even the wait for the stem cells to get into the country, was awful. While the magical transplant goes a long way, Ben is not out of the woods yet and faces a long and gruelling road to recovery from here. He is set to spend a month in hospital as his body begins to rebuild its immune system before continuing his recovery from home. The community rallied around Ben, with more than 500 people attending a swab day at Verulamium's rugby club last month in a desperate bid to find a donor. With only 7% of the UK on the register to donate, Katrina is keen for efforts to continue to help others who are in Ben's position, saying, I would hate this all to stop now because Ben has his match. There are so many more people like Ben out there, and it would be amazing if we could keep this going.
St Albans Wagamama gets new brunch menu. Food lovers in St Albans are in for a treat, with the city's Wagamama restaurant, one of just 22 in the UK, to be treated to the food giant's new brunch menu. After launching the menu yesterday, the chain will offer its first ever brunch menu to customers, with St Albans one of the lucky few chosen, and the only one in Hertfordshire. Served between 8:30 a.m. and 11:30 a.m, the menu will see many of the Asian cuisine-inspired chain's classic dishes given a mid-morning makeover. Many familiar menu items will be offered with a breakfast twist, such as the chicken katsu waffle. Also on the menu are a range of morning baos, with bao buns stuffed with a choice of bacon, sausage, vegan bacon or vegan sausage. As well as the food, a range of new cocktails and mocktails are available to round out the brunch experience. Chief Marketing Officer Kay Bartlett said, We've seen an increase in consumer demand for an all-day dining offering and appetite for brunch dishes. This announcement is in response to that, and we're thrilled to introduce our Wagamama take on brunch. The St Albans restaurant is located within the Christopher Place shopping centre.
Volunteers work to clean up the Wick. A former professional gardener turned volunteer street protector has spoken of the warm glow and community spirit that the work brings her. Carol Chalkley is part of Friends of the Wick, a small group of like-minded nature lovers who give up their time every Tuesday morning to keep their corner of St Albans in shape. The Wick is a nature reserve in the Marshalswick area of the city that often has trouble with overgrown trees, bushes, brambles, and the impact of poor weather. On July the 9th, Carol and her team worked tirelessly to clear the footpath of Marshall's Drive, Carol told the Hearts Advertiser. It's all about putting some love into a nature reserve that otherwise would be totally overgrown. If we didn't do this work, the pathways would be utterly inaccessible for residents. As well as clearing footpaths, the group also plant tree whips and generally maintain the area's aesthetic. With council budgets squeezed, they feel a duty to step up for their community. The 69-year-old explains, "We're a great community and we get on really well. It all comes from a common love of nature and we're always looking for new volunteers to join us. I think it's so important that we look after the areas where we live." While the main motivation is preserving the nature reserve, Carol and her team feel a sense of pride when recognised for their efforts by fellow residents, she explains. At least one person every week comes up to us and says, "Thank you for what you do. It gives me a little warm glow and a belief in what I'm doing." The Wick was originally owned by Sir Arthur Copson Peake, who transferred the land to St Albans City and District Council in 1929. It was officially designated as a local nature reserve in 1995. The Friends are always looking for more volunteers to join their mission to preserve the area's natural beauty and safety.
Update provided on timetable for local plan. An update has been provided on the progress of the St Albans local plan following the general election. The long-awaited plan is likely to see areas of greenbelt land in St Albans and Harpenden released to meet the demand for 15,000 new homes by 2041. The issue of whether or not to build homes on the green belt has been a hotly contested topic, both locally and nationally, with Britain's deepening housing crisis clashing with environmental concerns. Following July the 4th's poll and a June 25th meeting of the St Albans City and District Council Planning, Policy and Climate Committee, an update to residents has been provided. Councillors have been told that the draft plan is being amended and will be published in October, with a two-month public consultation to follow. Housing policy has been put firmly under the spotlight following the change of government, with new Chancellor Rachel Reeves using a speech to announce the return of government housing targets and a review of Greenbelt boundaries. Labour want to build 1.5 million houses over the next 5 years. But Council Leader Councillor Paul de Court said, "The government has been watching our attempts to produce a new local plan very closely, threatening to intervene if we do not make swift progress. It is far better if locally elected representatives decide on the details of our local plan rather than Whitehall, which will not have a feel for the area." And there's a picture alongside this article, an aerial picture of St Albans showing built-up areas and areas of greenery as well.
Districts MPs sworn into House of Commons. The MPs for St Albans and Harpenden and Berkhamsted have been sworn into the House of Commons as Parliament returned following the general election. Both constituencies were won by Liberal Democrats, with Daisy Cooper re-elected for St Albans and Victoria Collins winning the newly created Harpenden and Berkhamsted seat. As Parliament returned last week, all 650 new and returning MPs were required to take an oath that sees them swear their allegiance to the King and his heirs. MPs cannot speak in Parliament, vote, or receive their salary until they have taken this oath. Ms Cooper was sworn in last Tuesday, July 9th, and chose to take her oath on the King James Bible. Taking the oath, the Liberal Democrat deputy leader said, "I swear by Almighty God that I will be faithful and bear true allegiance to His Majesty King Charles, his heirs and successors, according to the law, so help me God." 2 days later, her colleague, Miss Collins, was sworn in, choosing to take the secular oath of affirmation, which reads, I do solemnly, sincerely, and truly declare and affirm that I will be faithful and bear true allegiance to His Majesty King Charles, his heirs and successors, according to law. With the business of swearing in complete, the new MPs turned their attention to the King's speech yesterday as the Hearts ad went to press.
Plans for new pizza shop raise concerns. Plans for a new hot food takeaway business in St Albans have been met by a backlash from nearby residents objecting to the proposals. The plans have been submitted to St Albans City and District Council, proposing a change of use for 17 Central Drive from a Class A2 professional services to a hot food takeout unit, primarily serving pizza. The application includes an area for cooking, a seating area for waiting customers, and the installation of an external extraction grill at the rear of the building. The property was most recently used as a photography studio for AG Studios, but currently sits vacant. If approved, the new shop would be open 7 days a week from 10 a.m. to midnight and serve takeaway food. However, the plans have been met with a string of objections, with residents voicing their concerns. One neighbour wrote, "I have a very strong objection to the proposals. A hot food takeaway would not serve local community needs, especially when there are numerous hot food outlets already offering takeaways nearby. With two schools located nearby, a hot food takeaway could become a hub for loitering at lunchtimes and in the evenings." Another resident simply wrote, "I think the takeaway will bring unwanted additional noise and rubbish in a quiet residential area. There are plenty of other establishments nearby."
Aled Jones to share career highlights. Singer and West End star Aled Jones will share his career highlights at Harpenden's Eric Morecambe Centre as part of a UK tour. Aled will appear in Harpenden on Sunday, September the 15th, sharing songs and stories of his life and career. First enjoying success as a boy when he recorded Walking in the Air for The Snowman, Aled has since had lead roles in Joseph and the Amazing Technicolor Dreamcoat, Chitty Chitty Bang Bang, and Irving Berlin's White Christmas. During Prince Charles and Princess Diana at Buckingham Palace, and said that one of his career highlights was working with Dame Julie Andrews.
Council set to buy former hospital. Bid to secure future of St Albans Nursery. Hertfordshire County Council is to purchase a former hospital in St Albans to secure the future of the Muriel Green Nursery School. The nursery, which has 130 places, already operates from the ground floor of the NHS-owned building in Church Crescent. But the NHS, which has not used the two-storey building for the past 25 years, now wants to sell off the property. At a meeting of the council's cabinet last Tuesday, July the 9th, councillors agreed that the council should purchase it. That will secure the future of the nursery and, councillors heard, the currently empty first floor of the building could also be used for the provision of youth services. Backing the proposal, Executive Member for Education, Libraries and Lifelong Learning, Councillor Caroline Clapper, said this was a really important setting for the community. Leader of the council, Councillor Richard Roberts, said he was grateful that the council had been able to have a really sensible conversation with the NHS in order to transfer the asset at a fair price. After pointing to the specialist provision at the site and the opportunity afforded by the space upstairs, Councillor Roberts said it sounded like this building certainly has a strong future for the council. According to the report considered by the Cabinet, the Council had secured a 99-year lease for part of the ground floor for the nursery in 2001, and currently pay a peppercorn rent. But that lease includes a break clause allowing the NHS or the County Council to terminate the lease subject to 30 months' notice. As part of the proposals, it was reported that youth provision that was to be provided on the Arriston site in Harpenden Road could be moved to the first floor of the former hospital building. This, according to the report, would be more accessible for service users, being a short walk from St Albans Town Centre. It says it would mean a first floor would not be required at the Arriston site, presenting a capital saving for the County Council. And there's a small picture alongside the article of the Muriel Green Nursery.
Primary school with thriving pupils rated good by Ofsted. A Harpenden primary school has been rated good by Ofsted following an inspection last month. Manland Primary School retained the score it was awarded by the inspectors 6 years ago. The school won praise for its culture, extracurricular activities, and approach to working with children with special educational needs, SEND. Manland Primary prides itself on its three values of inspiration, aspiration, and responsibility, with the report noting that those values are successfully embedded in day-to-day school life. The report says, pupils, including those with SEND, demonstrate highly positive attitudes towards their learning. They garner praise for the high expectations and clear routines that are in place. This contributes to an environment where children are happy and thriving when they come to school. Unusually, inspectors singled out pupils' understanding of the democratic process as particularly strong. The report points to the school having elections for house captains and its pupil parliament. Members of this parliament have the opportunity to meet with their local MP and visit the Houses of Parliament in Westminster. The curriculum is described as ambitious and well-designed, with a clearly and logically set-out roadmap from reception through to year six.
Chicken killed during break-in. Allotment owner infuriated after cowardly act. A Wheatamstead allotment holder is set to walk away from his plot of over 20 years after a cowardly break-in that saw one of his chickens killed and left in a box for him to find. Tracy Fold said he'd been left disheartened by the incident, which occurred at the Hitchens Field allotments on June 6. According to Tracy, break-ins and vandalism have been an intermittent problem over the last two decades, but this incident was particularly horrendous and has dulled his passion for the allotments. Speaking to the Hearts Advertiser, he recalls, "I woke up in the morning and saw a post on Facebook about chickens running around the allotments. We rushed down there and found chaos." The 61-year-old says he found chickens running around everywhere and fences vandalised. One of his chickens was missing, only for him to later find the animal dead inside a box, which he suspects was cruelly hidden for him to find. An act he describes as a particularly cowardly act. A spokesman for Hearts Police has confirmed that a number of chickens were reported as stolen after an enclosure fence was broken, and that a child's bike was also stolen from a wooden shed. Tracy spent 23 years working for the fire service as a watch manager before going on to work for Catch 22. A charity aimed at breaking down barriers for young people in education. Following the incident, the once passionate plot holder says he's lost his love for the place and barely visits the allotment other than to feed the chickens. This particularly stings, as having recently taken early retirement, the allotment took on added importance to him. The lifelong Wheatamstead resident added that his partner no longer feels safe there by herself. It's far more than just an allotment. It's a community, he said. But it no longer feels that way. And I've been made to feel like our passion doesn't matter. At the end of this year, the couple plan to walk away from the allotments entirely. Police have confirmed that two children were arrested in connection with the break-in, but were released with no further action, and the investigation has concluded. Wheatamstead Parish Council declined to comment when approached.
Family-run waffle business opens new pop-up shop. A popular online waffle shop has opened its first physical shop with a pop-up venue launching in St Albans. Based in Hitchin, Waffle Wands was set up in 2015 by brother and sister team Louis and Sophie, initially specialising in weddings. They provide freshly baked warm waffles with a variety of toppings, as well as pancakes, crumbles and s'mores. Now they've launched their first shop, which has opened in the Malting Shopping Centre. They say that the shop will remain there for the foreseeable future. Over the last 9 years, Waffle Wands has provided stalls for a number of corporate clients, including the Football Association, Warner Brothers, and the University of Oxford. It's also traded at major festivals, including Reading and Park Life. Announcing the news before the opening, Louis said, "Me and my sister are absolutely buzzing to announce we'll be opening our first pop-up shop in the centre of the Maltings. I want to give a massive thank you to everyone who's supported our small family business over the years and for all your lovely messages online. We've been on a crazy journey and we're hoping this can be the start of something special, which we can't wait to share with you all."
Hearts councillor suggests private health care for firefighters. Leading county councillor Maurice Bright has asked whether firefighters in Hertfordshire should be able to access treatment from private health care providers to get them back into work more quickly. Speedy treatment, he said, for those firefighters who are waiting would be better for their physical and mental health. He suggests access to private treatment could cut the costs incurred by the county's fire and rescue service in occupational health and overtime costs. Councillor Bright, who is executive member for Public Health and Community Safety, raised the issue at a meeting of the council's cabinet last Tuesday. He said, "I really do think there has to be a way, particularly in a service which is so physical, where there are injuries sustained, to get our people back to work, because it has an effect on their mental health if they can't do the work, and that has a whole knock-on effect on their families as well." Councillor Bright suggested there was a keenness to look at the possibilities. Additional occupational health costs were highlighted in the report as contributing to an overspend. Following the meeting, Councillor Bright stressed that he was not suggesting the provision of private health care for all firefighters, but access to private treatment for those firefighters who were facing long waits.
Charity receives £85,000 from anonymous donor. The Hertfordshire branch of a national charity is celebrating after receiving an £85,000 donation from an anonymous person. The generous donation has tipped funds raised by the Hertfordshire fundraising branch of Hearing Dogs for Deaf People to over £1 million. The charity held a celebratory lunch at its Southern Training Centre to recognise the branch's achievements and give members and staff a chance to reflect on some of the more memorable moments from the branch's 26-year history. Liz Ardent, who is now president of the branch, was inspired to form a branch in the region after meeting Bran and Betty Pilton, speakers at a national Hearing Dogs for Deaf People conference. Liz, 80, who has a hearing dog herself, said, "I knew nothing about fundraising when we first started, but learnt as I went along and from talking to other branches. In the first couple of years, we set ourselves a target to raise £5,000, because that's how much it cost to sponsor a hearing dog puppy's training in those days." Liz added, "When I think back to those early days, I could never have dreamt we would raise £1 million. It's down to a great deal of hard work by many people over a very long time. And there's a lovely picture of Liz cutting the cake to mark the Hertfordshire branch reaching its 1 million milestone with everybody watching.
Day Nursery thrilled to be rated good by Ofsted. The head of a St Albans nursery rated good by Ofsted has said that the report reflects their hard work. Wainscot House Day Nursery was rated good in all areas assessed by the Education Watchdog. During the last inspection, 6 years ago, the nursery was rated outstanding, but Principal Julie Duffy told the Hearts Ad that the Early Years Foundation stage curriculum changed in 2021, alongside the grading descriptors to reflect these changes. She says the inspector told her staff had worked hard to maintain the standard since 2018, and that the good rating is equivalent to the outstanding received last time. The report starts out strong by saying that children are happy and settled in the nursery. Inspectors say that they quickly build strong and trusting relationships with staff, as well as highlighting that babies snuggle up with staff to share books before sleeping. The report praises the nursery for fostering a love of books and reading in the children from a very young age. Praise is also given to the way staff work well together and the calm and harmonious environment around the nursery. The report is full of praise for how the transition to older age groups and eventually primary school is managed. It says, when children are ready to move to the next group or leave to go to school, staff support them to help them get used to new routines and different people and environments. Children visit their new group for short periods of time and experience familiar routines in the day, such as meal times, in their new room before they spend all their time there. On the more critical side, it was noted that the enthusiasm of staff means children sometimes do not have time to identify and solve problems for themselves. In a letter to parents shared with the Hearts Ad, the nurse's proprietor, Julie Prowse, wrote, "We are thrilled to be rated good in all areas. The inspector has identified the strength and dedication of the staff team in supporting children to learn, to the extent that practitioners can sometimes be a little too enthusiastic. For us, that just means that the staff's passion shines through."
Man charged after £300,000 worth of heroin seized in raid. A 23-year-old man has been charged with a string of drug offences after police seized around £300,000 worth of suspected heroin from a London Coney address. Mugove Mugeur was arrested after officers searched a property in the early hours of last Tuesday morning, July the 9th. The Hearts Police Operation Scorpion team received a tip-off from members of the public and seized the drugs. Mugeur has been charged with possession with intent to supply Class A drugs, heroin, possession of a Class A drug, cocaine, and possession of a Class B drug, cannabis. He has been remanded in custody and will appear at St Albans Crown Court on August the 7th. Police have reminded residents to report unusual activity online at www.hearts.police.uk/report or by calling 101. And there's a small picture along this side, this article, showing two or three packs of drugs and a penknife, open penknife next to them.
Rebuilding trust in politics. The newly elected Harpenden and Berkhamsted MP Victoria Collins writes about the importance of rebuilding trust in politics and what she is doing within her constituency. After my first week as the MP for Harpenden and Berkhamsted, I'm so humbled and grateful for the incredible local support I've seen. Thank you. The Liberal Democrats now have 72 MPs in Parliament, and I believe it's our duty to uphold a politics of service and rebuild trust in politicians. For me, that means putting local people first. From my first day in Parliament, I hit the ground running, writing to Thames Water, demanding action on the Markygate sewage overflow, which has pumped over 2,500 hours of sewage into the River Vare this year alone. I even took ITV to the chalk stream as they filmed my first week as MP. Daisy Cooper MP and I have written to the Secretaries of State for transport and levelling up, urging to block the expansion of Luton Airport in line with Climate Change Committee advice. When it comes to health and the cost of living crisis, I'm talking to local patient groups and local citizens' advice offices to tackle the top issues people are facing. All the while, I've been setting up my new team and offices, working through casework and getting to know the business of Parliament. It's also been a real delight to head to events such as the Wheatamstead Village Day. I'd like to think the rainbow that day was a good omen, and the Redbourne Festival. This new Parliament and politicians sitting in the chamber represent a seismic shift. Not only is it the largest number of new MPs in modern history, hailed as the most diverse in terms of race and gender, but the Liberal Democrats are now the biggest third party the House has ever seen. Sitting at the election of the Speaker, which must happen after a general election, was a surreal moment, overflowing with all the new MPs who don't fit on the benches. Then the swearing-in of each and every MP begins. For new MPs, this is our first time speaking in the chamber, and for me, it certainly felt momentous. Beyond the pomp and ceremony, however, there's a palpable feeling of renewal. And I know the important work has only just begun to deliver for local people and rebuild trust again.
TNF Soundings. Features from across the UK.
Hello, I'm Gilly, and here are the radio listings. Starting with Saturday, the 20th of July. The Hunter and the Hill is a biographical radio play about the Edinburgh-born novelist, essayist, poet and travel writer Robert Louis Stevenson on Radio 4 Extra at 5 p.m. In The Moon, Oliver Morton explores the different spaces across science, art and mythology that Earth's closest neighbour occupies in human life, on Radio 4 Extra at 6:30 p.m. The prom season is in full swing, and concerts can be heard every day this week at 7:30 p.m. on Radio 3, apart from Tuesday when the start time is 7 p.m. Moving on to Sunday the 21st of July. The castaway on Desert Island Discs today is novelist and screenwriter David Nicholls on Radio 4 at 10 a.m, while in a repeated edition of the programme from 2022, the castaway is presenter and former tennis player Sue Barker on Radio 4 Extra at 11 a.m. and 5 p.m. The subject of David Attenborough's life stories today is fossils, on Radio 4 Extra at 11:45 a.m. and 5:45 p.m. In Donald Trump and Black America, Nomia Iqbal meets some of Trump's African-American supporters to hear why they have spurned the Democrats and reveals how their support could prove decisive in the US election. It's on Radio 4 at 1:30 p.m. From Our Own Correspondent brings the stories behind Global Reports on Radio 4 at 9:30 p.m. Turning now to those programmes which broadcast at the same time every day from Monday to Friday. Radio 3's breakfast programme has a week of broadcasts featuring Petrock Trelawney travelling around the northeast of England, beginning on Monday on Holy Island, Lindisfarne, including live music from harpist Emily Hoyle. That's on Radio 3 at 6:30 a.m. A Walk of One's Own, Virginia Woolf on Foot, follows in the footsteps of the writer in four programmes, looking at some of her favourite places to walk, on Radio 4 Extra from Monday to Thursday at 9:30 a.m. Julie Enfield Investigates, Terminus, is an atmospheric thriller involving a grisly murder on a railway track, starring Imelda Staunton as the detective superintendent. It's on Radio 4 Extra every day this week at 6 a.m, 11 a.m. and 5 p.m. The composer of the week is Silvestre Revueltas, 1899 to 1940, described as a whirlwind of a composer who lived through a time of great upheaval in Mexico. It's on Radio 3 at 4 p.m. every day this week. Book at Bedtime continues the reading of Yellow Face by Rebecca F. Kwang on Radio 4 each day this week at 10:45 p.m. Here are some individual programmes to listen to through the week, starting with Monday, 22nd of July. In the first of a new three-part series, Mark Easton explores the history of policing protests in Britain, from the Peterloo Massacre to the present day, and considers where the future of protest lies, on Radio 4 at 11 a.m. Alexei Sales' Strangers on a Train starts a new six-part series with stories from the comedian's fellow travellers on a train journey from Nottingham to Skegness, on Radio 4 at 4:30 p.m. In the series History's Secret Heroes, presented by Helena Bonham Carter, The Spy Who Skied In from the Cold shines a light on thrill-seeker Christine Granville, who offered to ski across enemy lines and over the deadly Carpathian Mountains into Nazi-occupied Poland to gather intelligence for the British. It's on Radio 4 at 9 p.m. Some suggestions for Tuesday the 23rd of July. Grey Wing is a comedy by Simon Bullivant, starring Timothy Spall as inept furniture maker Nigel Struddock and his superhero alter ego Grey Wing, on Radio 4 Extra at 7 a.m, 12 noon and 6 p.m. Rogue Harry's is a four-part dramatisation of the 1931 book in Hugh Walpole's Lake District Saga, on Radio 4 Extra at 3 p.m. and 9 p.m. from Tuesday to Friday this week. In the series Art That Conquered the World, art historian Dr. James Fox asks how Constable's painting The Hay Wain became one of the most famous in the world, on Radio 4 at 4 p.m. Peter White presents In Touch with news and information for the blind and partially sighted, on Radio 4 at 8:45 p.m. In the first of a two-part documentary for Crossing Continents, Tim Waywell travels from the River Jordan to the Mediterranean, across a stretch of land that's perhaps the most argued over in the world, to find the true meaning of the phrase, from the river to the sea. It's on Radio 4 at 9 p.m. Moving on to Wednesday the 24th of July. Worse Than Murder is a seven-part programme looking back at the kidnap in 1969 of Muriel Mackay, which baffled police and, more than 50 years on, remains unsolved. Part 1 is on Radio 4 at 9:30 a.m. Today's drama, Oak Tree Close, sounds intriguing, a boy who believes he has magical teeth meets a king in a tree in Boscobel in 1651. Described as a ballad in seven scenes, tracing the life of a protective oak, it's on Radio 4 at 2:15 p.m. Choral Evensong this week comes from the Cathedral and Abbey Church of St Alban on Radio 3 at 3 p.m. Then on Thursday, the 25th of July, Rufus Hound's guest in My Teenage Diary this week is Jenny Murray, former presenter of Woman's Hour, on Radio 4 Extra at 8 a.m, 1 p.m. and 7 p.m. Today's drama, The Poor Olympics and the Flying Housewife, is based on true events at the 1948 London Austerity Olympics. A leading Dutch athlete, already told she is too old to compete at 30, discovers she's pregnant and ends up battling the men of the anti-sportswomen establishment. That's on Radio 4 at 2:15 p.m. The series Gilbert Without Sullivan, featuring stories by W.S. Gilbert, continues with a dramatisation of Tom Cobb or Fortune's Toy. Tom Cobb's engagement to Matilda O'Phipp follows the old adage that the course of true love never runs smooth. On Radio 4 Extra at 2:30 and 8:30 p.m. In this week's Ramblings, titled Surrey, From Public Park to the Countryside, Claire Balding hikes from Oaks Park to Kingswood in Surrey with the founders of Walking Post, a not-for-profit website sharing walking routes around London, Kent, Essex and beyond, on Radio 4 at 3 p.m. And so to Friday, 26th of July. Ice Cream Lady is a portrait of Isle of Wight ice cream seller Vicky Howard, who watches birds and foxes, talks to customers and remembers her previous colourful career in showbiz. On Radio 4 Extra at 9:30 a.m. In soul music, Leslie Garrett and Jeff Hold reflect on the impact of the song The Impossible Dream from the musical Man of La Mancha. On Radio 4 Extra at 10 a.m. and 4 p.m. In the series The Food Programme, Becoming Michelin, hears from female chefs about their journey to the top of an industry that is still dominated by men. On Radio 4 at 11 a.m. Finally, in Perfect Pitch with Dan Walker, you can hear classical music that has soundtracked sport's most iconic moments and inspired the nation's famous sports stars, featuring interviews with special guests picking the music. That's on Classic FM at 9 p.m. Thank you to Wendy for compiling this list. Enjoy your listening week.
Now for the audio described television programme starting Saturday 20th and ending 26th of July 2024, compiled by Sarah and read by Rebecca. Now that the football and tennis has finished, there's a bit of a lull in the sport for a few days before the Olympics starts on Friday 26th of July. So let's start with Saturday the 20th. Mary Berry's Cook and Share is in Edinburgh this week, where she has the honour of starting the marathon there on BBC One at 11:30 in the morning. This is followed on BBC One by Homes Under the Hammer at 12. On BBC Two at noon, the Hairy Bikers are cooking the perfect roast, and there's a repeat of the Sewing Bee at 2 p.m. Over on ITV at 11:40, Ainsley Harriet is at Blickling Hall in Norfolk with two celebrity chefs on the National Trust Cook-Off. This is followed at 12:40 p.m. by James Martin's French Adventure when he explores a cognac distillery. Channel 4 has a run of The Simpsons from 9:45 to 1:20 with Bart and his family getting up to their usual tricks. And Channel 5 have Canine Tricks with dogs behaving very badly from midday to 3 p.m. BBC One are showing live athletics from London at 1:15 to 5 p.m. This is the final Diamond League event before the Olympics. It's not audio described, but the commentary may be of interest. If you fancy an afternoon film, there's the epic Western, How the West Was Won, on BBC Two at 3:30 p.m. Over on Channel 4, and back to the sporting theme, at 4:55, Path to Paris, The Hunt for Gold, follows British athletes as they prepare for the Paris Games. Early evening on Saturday, ITV are showing the film Aquaman at 5:20 p.m, which is followed at 8 o'clock by Lee Mack's game show, The 1% Club. In Casualty, on BBC One at 8:25, Dylan struggles with devastating news. The drama continues at 9:15 on BBC One with part 3 of the new drama High Country. Part 4 continues after the 10 o'clock news at 10:20 p.m. ITV have two new series starting on Saturday. Firstly, a comedy, Piglets, at 9:30, which is set in a police training school. This is then followed by a true crime drama called Love and Death, which is based on the story of Candy Montgomery, a housewife in 1980s Texas. If you'd like a Saturday night film, there's Spy Action Adventure at 9 p.m. on Channel 4 with Kingsman, The Golden Circle. And then later, at 10 to midnight, there's more action with London Has Fallen, also on Channel 4. On to Sunday, 21st of July. On ITV, there's Jimmy and Shivy's Farmhouse Breakfast with drag artist Bag of Chips. And later, also on ITV, Tom Kerridge's in Cornwall in his Cook Britain show. There's plenty of films on Sunday, starting with the animated film Sing on ITV at 1:35 p.m. This is followed by Moonraker, the James Bond classic, at 3:40 p.m, also on ITV. At the same time on BBC One, there's the part animated fantasy Peter Rabbit 2. This is followed at 5:05 on BBC One by David Attenborough's Blue Planet 2, Oceans of Wonder. In the evening at 8, ITV have a new series of the crime drama McDonald and Dodds. In this first of four episodes, the detective duo finds the body of a woman missing for 35 years. BBC One continue with the gritty drama Jetty at 9 p.m, in which Ember reaches breaking point. The late night film on BBC One after the 10 o'clock news at 10:30 p.m. is Yesterday, in which Jack wakes up to find himself in a world where nobody has heard of the Beatles. BBC Two have The Turkish Detective at 10 p.m, followed by the thriller The Hurt Locker at 10:55 p.m, which is about a US Army bomb disposal team working the last few days of their tour in Iraq. If you want some light relief from all the drama, at 10:15 on ITV there's The Last Laugh, a tribute to the veteran comedian Barry Humphries. Moving on to the programmes that are at the same time and same channel each weekday this week. All the following are on BBC One. Homes Under the Hammer at 11:15 a.m. except Monday. Animal Park at 2:30, Escape to the Country at 3 p.m. and The Repair Shop at 3:45. For the other channels, Cooking with the Stars on ITV One at 2 p.m. Channel 4 offers Car SOS at 1:10. Now looking at Monday, 22nd of July. In addition to the regular daytime shows, on BBC Two at 6 p.m, there's the last episode of Michael Portillo's Great Continental Railway Journey, when he completes his journey to the Arctic Circle. BBC One have EastEnders at 7:30 p.m, and later at 8:30, there's Surviving the Post Office. Actor Will Mellor, star of the award-winning drama Mr. Bates vs. the Post Office, meets some of the real-life people affected by the Post Office scandal. This is followed at 9 by the final episode of The Jetty. Also on Monday, at 8 on BBC Two, Horizon's documentary The Battle to Beat Malaria charts the story of the development of a vaccine against malaria. ITV One offer Emmerdale at 7:30, following by Coronation Street at 8. Then it's Long Lost Family, in which Davina McCall and Nicky Campbell help to untangle one family's story. Over on Channel 4 at 9pm, Sophie Morgan's Fight to Fly exposes the shocking service a group of disabled travellers receive. Moving on to Tuesday, 23rd of July. BBC Two are showing Cricket, the 100 match, between 2:30pm and 9:30pm. This covers both men's and women's games between Oval Invincibles and Birmingham Phoenix. Whilst this is not audio described, the commentary may be of interest to some of you. In the evening on BBC One after EastEnders, Stacey Solomon's Sort Your Life Out helps the Clark family sort out 521 odd socks and 75 Barbie dolls in the hope of decluttering their home. This is on at 8pm and is followed on BBC One by Death in Paradise. ITV One have Emmerdale at 7:30 as usual, followed by Midsummer Murders at 8. Channel 4 offer Worst House on the Street at 8 when they visit a house of horrors in Northern Ireland which needs all the team's expert help. This is followed at 9pm by a new series of The Body Detectives, which follows the work of Locate International, an organisation dedicated to revisiting forgotten cases of lost or not found people. We're now on to Wednesday 24th. BBC One have EastEnders at 7:30, followed by The Repair Shop at 8, and then the final of The Sewing Bee at 9pm. There's a late film also on BBC One, Marry Me, a romantic comedy starring Jennifer Lopez and Owen Wilson, after the news at 10:40pm. On BBC Two, Robson Green escapes for the weekend at 6:30pm with Coronation Street actress Melanie Hill. Later, Greg Wallace explores a factory where 432 million crumpets are made in Inside the Factory on BBC Two at 8pm. ITV have Emmerdale at 7:30pm and then Corrie at 8, which is followed at 9 by a slightly scary sounding documentary called Turbulence, How Safe Is Your Flight? On a more light-hearted note, over on Channel 4 at 8 is Kirsty and Phil's Love It or List It. In this episode, a couple try to resolve the lack of space in their 5-bed chalet house. This is followed on Channel 4 at 9pm by 2 episodes of the drama series Suspect. Now, Thursday, 25th of July. EastEnders is back on BBC One at 7:30pm when Sonia falls out with Lauren and Martin. This is followed by no doubt more family fallings out in Outnumbered at 8pm. Following this at 8:30pm on BBC One, former athlete Linford Christie looks back on his extraordinary career. BBC Two are again showing a 100 cricket match, starting at 2:45pm. This time, it's Manchester Originals versus Welsh Fire. There's Emmerdale as usual on ITV at 7:30pm, then Tom Kerridge cooks Britain at 8:30. This week, Tom tours Scotland, visiting a mussel farm and a craft beer brewery. Channel 4 have George Clark's Amazing Spaces at 8pm. This week, a young couple try to fit a camper on the back of an Italian tuk-tuk. What could possibly go wrong? This is followed by the final 2 episodes of ITV's Drama Suspect at 9pm. And finally, on to Friday, 26th of July. BBC One are showing the Olympics 2024 opening ceremony all evening, starting at 5:45pm, hosted by Claire Balding. Expect a bold and original show. Early evening on BBC Two at 6, there's Robson Green's Weekend Escape, this time with his Uncle Matheson. This is followed by Great Asian Railway Journeys, when Michael Portillo continues his exploration of Hong Kong. It's Emmerdale and then Corrie from 7:30pm on ITV. After this, still on ITV, the documentary Champions Full Gallop continues. This follows a group of professional jockeys as they prepare for a series of important races. On Channel 4, the Coniston Mountain Rescue Team are summoned to help a paraglider who has crash-landed in Lake District Rescue at 8pm. For anyone who'd like a late film, there's The Beach on BBC One at 11:30pm, starring Leonardo DiCaprio and Tilda Swinton. Over on ITV at 10:45, there's Moonraker, a classic spy adventure starring Roger Moore. We hope you find something of interest.
Hello, everyone. This is 10 Today, a 10-minute set of exercises to do at home to help keep yourself active. Before we get to today's presenter, a couple of housekeeping points to note. The 10 Today project is funded by the Big Lottery and Sport England, and when you're doing the exercises, it's important that you don't push yourself too far, and by taking part, you agree to 10 Today's terms and conditions. You can read these terms and conditions at tnflink.uk/10T, and the 10T is the digit 1, the digit 0, and the letter T. And please remember that you agree to take part at your own risk. Today's exercises are brought to you by Liz, and here she is.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to 10 Today, Series 2, Session Number 1. These are short 10-minute physical activity routines which will get you moving and stretching. They're great for your health, including boosting your mood, and very importantly, they are designed to support your everyday movements, your functional fitness, your flexibility, balance, and mobility, such as when you have to reach up, turn, bend down, and so on. These simple routines will help you with that. Just take them at your own pace. There are plenty of options. If an exercise feels too much, then just take it easy and have a break. All the exercises can be done either standing up or sitting down. So just do whatever feels good for you today. When lifting your arms or knees, only go as far as is comfortable. If you have any problems with your knees or hips, take care not to twist them during the movements. It can also help to pull in your tummy when you're bending your back. And just breathe normally throughout these activities. We want you all to do these activities safely. You are responsible for monitoring how you're feeling throughout the sessions. If you feel any discomfort or pain, for example, if you feel unwell or dizzy, or experience palpitations, then please stop and seek medical advice. If you're remaining seated, it would be ideal if you can use a hard chair, preferably one without arms, such as a dining chair that you can sit upright in, with a straight back and with your feet flat on the floor. If you're standing, just keep your feet hip-width apart, relax your shoulders and take a good strong stance. And you might want to have a sturdy chair nearby to hold on to sometimes for balance. So we're just going to start with a warm-up. You're just going to quickly tap or pat different parts of your body. So briefly tap along each arm, one at a time in different places. Your upper arm, your forearm, and your wrist. Do the same on both arms. Then pat the top of both legs, just quickly tapping up and down your legs in various places towards your knees for a few seconds. You should be nicely warmed up now and ready to move. So we're going to start with supporting the spine. This one works the upper body. So just face forwards and keep your back nice and straight. If you're sitting, remember to keep both feet flat on the floor. Now raise both arms straight up in the air, pushing up towards the sky and with your palms facing upwards. Then breathe both arms down together, turning your palms downwards and keep pushing them down towards the floor. And again, raise both arms straight up, extending them towards the ceiling, palms facing up and then coming down, with palms facing down and pushing towards the floor. Do this a few more times now. Try to get your arms as straight as you can. You can reach higher if you are able to, and you can really push down, but always make sure you feel comfortable. There are lots of benefits to this one. It's good for your arms and shoulders, also your back and chest, as well as your wrists. Next, it's knee to core. This movement's great for improving your balance. If you're standing, you can hold on to a sturdy chair for balance. So, in the usual starting position, with your feet hip-width apart and shoulders relaxed, just face forwards with your arms down by your sides and keep your back nice and straight. Now lift your right leg, bending your knee and raising it towards your chest. Hold that position briefly, and bring your foot down to the floor again. Now lift up your left leg. Raise your knee towards your chest, hold briefly and bring it down again. Repeat this a few more times. It's a bit like marching on the spot, but slower and with both arms down by your sides. If you want to work a little harder, you can lift your legs higher, just as far as is comfortable, and you can lean slightly towards your knees to put a bit of a pull in your lower back. Just alternate your legs, lifting up and back down. This is good for your legs, hips and core muscles. Now it's time for Through the Mist. This one's like swimming, the breaststroke. So stretch both your arms out directly in front of you at shoulder height and with your palms facing outwards a few inches apart. Then, keeping your feet facing forward, twist your upper body to the left. Now pull both arms back in line with your shoulders and bend your elbows, then push your arms out again, just as if you're doing a breaststroke or trying to part the mist. So again, facing to the left, arms straight out and palms facing out. Pull back your arms, bend your elbows, then start again. We'll do a few more on the left and then repeat the movement on your right side. Don't put too much stress on your knees. So both arms stretched out in front of you, feet facing forwards. Twist to the side, then pull those arms back. You can lean more into it if you like, and you can pull your arms further back against your shoulder blades. A couple more now. Great work. This is really good for the chest, shoulders, arms and core. The next one is called Charge Fists. This is a martial arts type of movement that works your chest and core, arms and shoulders. So whether you're standing or sitting, make two fists and bend both arms at the elbow as if you're getting ready for a fight, bringing your fist up towards your shoulders. Then just push your right arm forward, keeping it nice and straight at shoulder level. Pull it back towards your body and then punch forward with your left arm. So carry on with this. You're just punching forward with one arm at a time, alternating your arms each time. You can lean into it and put a bit of power and aggression into that punching arm if you like, or punch a little higher. Now it's time for high toes. So, facing forwards, with your feet a comfortable distance apart, just raise both heels off the ground, going up into the balls of your feet and raising both arms at the same time, bending them down at the elbow as you raise them up. Then bring your heels and arms back down again at the same time. And do this again, keeping it nice and slower. The slower the better. This is good for your balance and your core, and you should feel it pulling your calves. Just keep going slowly up and down into the balls of your feet and a bit higher into your toes if you can. If you're seated, you can lean slightly forwards in your chair and feel it going through your legs. The next one is forest to sky. So lean forward slightly, and if you're standing, bend your knees a little way. Now, with a nice sweeping movement, lower your right arm down towards your left leg. Then sweep your arm slowly back up to the right as you straighten up, stretching your arm above your head. Then bring it back down to your side and swap to the other arm. So lean forwards, bend your knees, and this time lower your left arm down towards your right leg and sweep it back up again to the left. So keep going with this, alternating your arms, lowering one arm at a time down towards the opposite leg and stretching it back up high and then back down by your side. This is good for your back, shoulders, arms and core. Now it's connect with the earth. Starting from the usual position, with your feet hip width apart and arms down by your sides. Bend both wrists upwards so your fingers point forwards and your palms face down. Then, bending your knees at the same time, push your arms down towards the floor. Then straighten up and pull your arms back with the palms still facing down and elbows bent, tucking them in close to the sides of your body. Repeat this a few more times. If you're seated, press down through your feet and also focus on the arm movements, pushing down and pulling up. Keep going, just a couple more times. Well done. Now it's time for weighing the grain. Raise both arms and stretch them out to each side, keeping them at shoulder level, palms facing down. Then tilt so that one arm goes up as the other comes down, a bit like an aeroplane. Then come back to the centre and tilt to the other side, just as if you're weighing the grain on each arm. Alternate from left to right for a few more times. This one's great for your arms, hips, legs and chest, as well as your shoulders. To make it more challenging, try to make one arm go lower and the other go higher. Great. The next one is called the border and beyond. From the usual starting position, step your right foot forward with the knee slightly bent into a lunge position with your training leg naturally raised on its toes. Take care that your bent knee isn't further forward than your toes. Then stretch your arms out together in front of you with your palms facing forward in a pushing motion, as if you're blocking or pushing someone away. Keep your arms straight and at shoulder height, and then step back, bringing your arms back at the same time. Then switch to the left leg, stepping forward into a lunge and pushing your arms out in front, nice and slowly. Keep going with this, alternating your legs between right and left. You can do a longer or deeper lunge if you're able to, with nice high arms. These movements work your back, arms, shoulders, legs and core muscles. And the last exercise is kick across. If you're standing for this one, you can hold on to something sturdy, like a chair or a kitchen work surface to help you balance. So with a straight back, raise your right leg a few inches off the floor, keeping it as straight as you can, and just kick that leg across the front of the other. Bring your foot back to the floor and switch to the left leg, just kicking across and alternating your legs. Keep going with this for a few more times. Only move within your capabilities and make smaller movements if you need to. If you're comfortable and want to work a bit harder, you can kick a bit higher. As well as helping your balance, this is great for your legs and buttocks. So that's it for the exercises. Well done! We're just going to finish with a quick shake to cool down. So raise both arms up above your head towards the ceiling and just briefly wave your hands and arms in the air. Then lift one leg slightly from the floor if you can. Shake it out in the air for a second or two. Raise the other leg and shake that one out too. Or you can just shake your upper body instead. So that's the end of the session. Great work, everyone. We hope you enjoyed it. Doing 10 today, just 3 times a week, can have positive benefits for your physical health and improve your well-being too. It's short, it's fun, and you'll simply feel better, so do keep going. You can also watch videos of all the sessions at 10today.co.uk.
TNS Soundings.
Hello, this is Sue, and here are some notable events which happened this week in the past. On the 21st of July, 1983, the lowest temperature on Earth was recorded. In Vostok, Antarctica, the temperature reached minus 128.6 degrees Fahrenheit, which is equivalent to minus 89 degrees Celsius. The Vostok station is one of the most remote research stations in the world and operates on about 2.3 miles of ice. In addition to boasting the world's lowest recorded temperatures, Antarctica is also the windiest and driest continent. Antarctica doesn't have permanent residents, apart from some penguins and seal species, but an estimated 5,000 research scientists work there in the summer months.
On 22nd of July, 1894, the Parisian magazine Le Petit Journal organised what is considered to be the world's first competitive car race. The competition for horseless carriages, or Concours des voitures sans chevaux, was a pioneering city-to-city motoring competition, and over 100 people paid the 10-franc entrance fee, with participants ranging from serious manufacturers to amateurs. The competition was preceded by 4 days of vehicle exhibition and qualifying events that created great crowds and excitement, and 25 vehicles started the race, which left Porte-Maillot and went through the Bois de Boulogne before heading to Rouen, 125 kilometres away. The first car over the finishing line after 6 hours and 48 minutes was driven by Jules Albert de Dion at an average speed of 19 kilometres an hour. But he didn't win the main prize, as his steam vehicle required a stoker, which rendered him ineligible. The first prize of 5,000 francs was shared equally between manufacturers Panhard and Peugeot, with Peugeot's race winner being a 3-horsepower vehicle.
On the 23rd of July, 1868, the All England Croquet Club was founded in Wimbledon, and in 1877, the name was changed to the All England Croquet and Lawn Tennis Club. It's best known as the venue for the Wimbledon Tennis Championships, the only Grand Slam tennis event still held on grass. Initially an amateur event that occupied club members and their friends for a few days each summer, the championships have now become far more prominent than the club itself, although it does still operate as a private members' tennis club. The early club colours were found to be almost identical to those of the Royal Marines, so they were changed in 1909 to the present club colours of dark green and purple. During the Wimbledon fortnight in 2023, over 500,000 people attended to watch the tennis.
On the 24th of July, 1851, the window tax was repealed in England. Introduced in 1696 under King William III, the window tax consisted of two parts, a flat rate of 2 shillings per house and a variable rate for the number of windows above 10 in the house. Certain rooms, particularly dairies, cheese rooms and milk houses, were exempt providing they were clearly labelled, and is not uncommon to find the name of such rooms carved into the lintel of houses from the period. The tax existed for 155 years, but eventually proved unpopular, given that it was seen by some as a tax on light and air, and as a result it was eventually repealed.
On the 25th of July, 1917, in Paris, the exotic dancer Mata Hari was sentenced to death by firing squad by a French court for spying on Germany's behalf during World War I. Born in a small town in northern Holland as Margaretha Gertrude Zelle, she performed in Paris as a dancer, adopting the stage persona of Mata Hari and claiming that she was taught ancient Indian dances by a priestess who gave her the name, which meant Eye of the Dawn. Her dancing earned fans all over Europe, where she packed dance halls from Moscow to Berlin to Madrid, partly because she performed almost nude. Mata Hari was also a celebrated courtesan, and spying charges arose from her relationships with several high-ranking military officers and political figures from France and Germany during World War I. The details of Mata Hari's alleged spying activities were and remain unclear. Her trial was riddled with bias and circumstantial evidence, with many believing that the French authorities trumped her up as the greatest woman spy of the century as a distraction from the huge losses the French army was suffering on the Western Front. Viewed by many as a victim due to her career as a dancer and a courtesan, and the French need to find a scapegoat, Mata Hari remains one of the most glamorous figures to come out of the shadowy world of espionage, and is the archetype of the female spy.
On the 26th of July, 1945, in the 11th hour of World War II, Winston Churchill was forced to resign as Prime Minister following his party's electoral defeat by the Labour Party. After the outbreak of World War II, Churchill became Prime Minister of a coalition government. He rallied the British people to a resolute resistance against Nazi Germany and orchestrated Franklin D. Roosevelt and Joseph Stalin into an alliance that eventually crushed the Axis. In July 1945, just a few weeks before the defeat of Japan in World War II, Churchill's Conservative government suffered an electoral loss in the first general election held in Britain in more than a decade. When Churchill resigned from the post of Prime Minister, the Labour Party leader, Clement Attlee, was immediately sworn in as the new British leader.
On the 29th of July, 1981, two of the most well-known characters in British soap history, Ken Barlow and Deirdre Langton, were married. The TV wedding happened just a couple of days before the royal wedding of Charles and Diana, and it actually got better viewing figures for ITV, as 24 million people watched Alf Roberts accompany Deirdre up the aisle to get hitched to Ken. Despite all the drama in their relationship and a divorce, Ken and Deirdre married again in 2005, and their nuptials were watched by 13 million viewers, compared to the 9 million who watched Prince Charles marry Camilla Parker Bowles the following day.
This is Rupert Evershed reading my monthly nature notes for the Hearts ad. An orchid summer. Some things in nature have the power to make enthusiasts, or dare I say geeks, of us all. Ordinarily, the extremes of expressed passion, the odd behaviours and the retelling of obscure discoveries are the reserve of the few, hobbyists and specialists in their field. Such characters have often been portrayed in ways that emphasise their obsessions. Khaki clothing, thick glasses and, to all intents and purposes, looking like middle-aged Boy Scouts embellished with binoculars or a magnifying glass to highlight their particular focus. Of course, these are all huge generalisations and mostly outdated caricatures, but the truth remains that real enthusiasts are fringe people, delving into the detail and experience of nature that most others are either ignorant of or ignore. I am one of those geeks when it comes to birds, and more other flora and fauna too. I'm sure that at times I conform to the caricatures. However, just occasionally, my enthusiasm is shared by all, regardless of their usual everyday nonchalance. Certain species or natural phenomenon have the power to captivate, regardless of former devotions. Sunsets and sunrises, of course, but also barn owls, kingfishers, and otters. Something about their inherent beauty, movement, or appearance has the potency to transform even the dullest critic into an avid enthusiast, willing to embrace momentarily a childlike excitement and abandon in place of usual social norms. This past month, I have encountered one of those powerful draws of nature, this time in the plant kingdom. Whatever the weather has done this spring, it seems to have benefited those most beautiful of plants, the orchids. Always rare and much sought after by orchid hunters, orchids have throughout history drawn admirers from all walks of life. Part of their intrigue comes simply from their rarity, but also because they are genuinely unusual flowers, mimicking the shape of bees, insects, monkeys, and even man in their attempts to attract pollinators. At Tittenhanger gravel pits on the edge of St Albans, I discovered my first ever bee orchids this year, and have had the chance to marvel close up at their intricacy. I hesitated to share the news, but thankfully bee orchids are one of the more widespread orchids, and Tittenhanger can boast more than 60 plants this year. Though tiny plants, they have drawn many visitors who may be seen staring intently at grassy banks, crouching down and pointing, or even lying down for the perfect bee orchid photograph. Aside from their beauty and rarity, orchids add to their aura of excitement by popping up in the most unexpected of places. A lawn that has been left uncut, a roadside verge, including this year the far from salubrious setting of Bulldog Service Station. One young naturalist hit orchid gold just recently as he walked an area of rough ground in St Albans. 8-year-old Caspar Lee Motzko, who is familiar with many of the plants in his local area, noticed an unusual orchid growing and contacted Hearts and Middlesex Wildlife Trust to share his discovery. The single plant turned out to be the extremely rare lizard orchid, so named for its petals' resemblance to the long, thin body shape of lizards. Ian Denholm, the county botanical recorder for Hearts and national orchid referee for the Botanical Society of Britain and Ireland, commented, "The lizard orchid is one of our most spectacular native orchids and is a very significant find in Hearts. There are long-standing colonies in Kent, Sussex, Cambridgeshire and Somerset. Elsewhere in the UK, it is rare and greatly sought after by orchid enthusiasts. One turned up in 2020 in a private wildflower lawn at Browing in Hearts, Before that, there is just a single Hearts record from the 1930s. Casper must be congratulated for his sharp eyes, but his find's location must also remain top secret. A study published in 1999 revealed that the main contributor to the lizard orchid's rarity was down to plant collecting, with plants being dug up for private collections or simply to be transplanted in private gardens. Orchids are one of the wonders of nature, with the power to pull a crowd, so if you come across them, please take only a photograph and think twice before sharing their location.
Hi, this is an article from Hearts Life magazine called Ancient Highway, and it's about the Great North Road, cycled in this case by Steve Silk, a BBC journalist. He says it was traversed by royals, rebels, traders, and highwaymen, and it was once the backbone of Britain. When the great American essayist Ralph Waldo Emerson coined the phrase, "Life is a journey, not a destination," he probably wasn't thinking of the A1. But what is today's monotonous motorway up much the length of Britain was once more or less the route of the infinitely more romantic Great North Road. To mark the centenary of the numbering of roads in Britain by the newly formed Ministry of Transport, that's 100 years ago, thereby erasing on paper at least the Great North Road, BBC journalist and author Steve Silk went on a mission to cycle the original 400-mile route from London to Edinburgh, including through Hertfordshire's historic coaching stops. He says, "I was basically on a pilgrimage to try and seek out the glory days of the Great North Road, the days when mail coaches raced northwards, changed horses in strategically placed inns along the way. I do love the fact that even today, counties have their own characteristics. Hertfordshire, seen from the modern A1M, appears lush and green with barely a building to be seen. Hertfordshire's rivers drain south into the Thames Basin, but once you climb up to Bedfordshire, they drain the other way into the Wash. A fun fact, as my daughters would say." Being a home counties boy, Steve thought he knew Hertfordshire pretty well, but soon discovered he really didn't as he aimed his Jamis Aurora bike north of London. As a southerner, travelling north, I knew I had to be on my guard for the first few days. There's a danger that you only start to really pay attention once things look and feel different. Everything from the accent to the attitude and the architecture. But in reality, I felt that Hertfordshire did have its own character, and that this old road heading all the way up to Edinburgh might just have contributed to it. Hertfordshire still has bucket loads of character despite its proximity to London. Take Baldock, for example, another town to prosper in the coaching era. It's still easy to spot what they call carriage arches, surviving within both pubs and private houses. One particular Hertfordshire pub stands out for Steve, however, the Eight Bells in Old Hatfield. It was the inn Bill Sykes, bullseye in tow, fled to following his murder of Nancy in Oliver Twist. Charles Dickens was a visitor to the pub, and the charismatic watering hole couldn't escape Steve's notice. There are some pubs which I find impossible to pass by, and the Eight Bells was one of them. It's a whitewashed building that seems to have become embedded in the landscape over the years. I had my swift half sitting at a window where I was level with pedestrians' feet. He adds that the Great North Road once ran straight through the grounds of nearby stately home Hatfield House. It wasn't until the 19th century that the Marquess of Salisbury bought himself a bit more privacy by moving the Great North Road westwards with the help of a canny three-way deal with the old Turnpike Trust and the new Great Northern Railway. That track still exists, and I cheekily asked if the house would open the gates especially for me, in the interests of historical authenticity, of course. They were very polite, and even offered me a complimentary ticket. It did mean I could explore Hatfield House itself, and what a treasure it is. Alongside Hatfield, Old Wellin stood out for Steve on his bike ride. The reason I loved Wellin is that it's one of those timeless high streets where I find it's remarkably easy to imagine a time when the coach was the king of the road. The hooves clattering and the guard blowing his horn. I didn't have the space to explore this feature in the book, but I absolutely love the fact that Welin had the barefaced cheek to build a museum directly underneath the modern A1. It's dedicated to some important Roman remains found in the vicinity, and it's well worth a visit. Another place that warrants a visit in the village, Steve said, is the Wellington. Dating back to the 14th century, it counts both of Britain's favourite Samuels among its distinguished guests. Dr. Samuel Johnson was a regular, while the diarist Samuel Pepys said that of all the nights that ever I slept in my life, I never did pass a night more epicurism of sleep. High praise indeed. I'm not entirely sure what it means. Of course, another visitor that actually Steve doesn't mention was Vincent van Gogh, who was in England for some time, and he came to visit his sister, who was in Welin. And Vincent himself had walked, I believe, all the way from Canterbury, where he was staying for a time. Following old maps and archive material, along a route that has shaped the nation through centuries of travel, Steve became enamoured with the old road. I was in the very unusual position of being able to do whatever I wanted without consequence. This is not a Land's End to John O'Groats race. It's a journey. A journey to be savoured. And the journey has had a lasting impact on him. And his book, The Great North Road, London to Edinburgh, 11 days, 2 wheels, and 1 ancient highway, has been out since July the 8th, at a price of $9.99.
Hello, my name's Sue, and this story is called Poet's Corner. Looking for a way to spread positivity in lockdown, the owner of a special garden near Wheat Hampstead began pinning poems to her fence. It was the start of a collaboration with walkers. A little lane, the brook runs close beside, and spangles in the sunshine, while fish glide swiftly by, and hedges leafing with the green spring tide. This lovely verse from On a Lane in Spring, by the 19th century poet John Clare, known for his celebrations of the English countryside, has always been a favourite of Sarah Jane Nalkane. When COVID made an unwelcome entrance and we went into lockdown last March, Sarah Jane wanted to lift the people's spirits during their daily walk. So she put up poems on the fence by a public footpath that runs by her garden and home near Wheat Hampstead. "I've always liked poetry," explains Sarah Jane, "and like everyone else, I was trying to adapt to the news of the COVID pandemic and a change of lifestyle as we all began the first lockdown. I was trying to get my family back home. My daughter was at university in Edinburgh and feeling quite down from all the lifestyle changes that were drastically happening around us. Reading poetry helped me feel calm, and I thought it would be a good idea to share my favourite poems with people walking by the house. Water and House sits on the side of a hill not far from a small bridge that crosses the River Lee. The elegant Jacobean manor was built in 1610 by Sir John Jennings. The four-acre garden was quite formal, with plenty of mature trees and yew hedges, when Sarah Jane and her husband James moved here in 1999. But they soon started to clear areas to open up views of the river and the Hertfordshire landscape. The footpath running by the garden has a wooden fence, where poems were pinned, and Sarah Jane also left a notebook and a pen to encourage passers-by to comment. "I never really thought that there would be a big response," she says, "but I hoped the poems would make people stop and reflect on nicer things rather than all the bad news that surrounded us." The comments book soon started to fill up, however, including those walkers had suggested. She also emailed photos of the poems to those shielding at home. Later in the year, when shielding restrictions had finished, some of those people came and looked at the poems for themselves, and it was a delight to see, says Sarah Jane. It also gave the opportunity for a socially distanced chat over the garden fence. The fence of poetry continued through the summer as restrictions were lifted and more poems were added to the display, with suggestions from passers-by, including poetry in different languages, and many were inspired to write their own. Gardens weren't open for a while, and along with a chance to immerse themselves in poems, people enjoyed their country walks and glimpses of the garden, flowers and wildlife from the footpath, says Sarah Jane. The fence of poetry remains today, and is continuously updated. Sarah Jane is looking forward to opening her garden once again. Groups of 20 can book appointments until October. The garden at Water End House was first opened for the National Garden Scheme in 2018 for the Snowdrop Festival, and more than 800 people visited the first weekend. The garden opened again in September the following year for autumn colour from trees, foliage and borders, and was again popular with visitors. The garden opened this year in June and offered many flowering displays in the borders at the height of the gardening year, including roses, peonies, irises and herbaceous perennials. "We have traditional long English country garden herbaceous borders," explained Sarah Jane, "and there are other areas with different planting themes, flint gardening walls, a vegetable garden, an orchard with old apple and pear trees, ponds and water features, and a formal garden area in front of the house with classic lines of yew hedges. If you'd like to visit the garden at Water End House, email Sarah Jane to arrange a date for a group or a bespoke visit at sj@nalcaine, that's nallcain.com.
TNF Soundings. Features from across the UK.
This is Alastair Hutton with a tribute to a great Scottish Christian who ran very fast. I've called it a golden year. 100 years ago, an outstanding Scottish runner brought fame and glory to his country with a gold medal and a world record at the Olympic Games in Paris in July 1924. Although an Olympic gold for Britain was a triumph worth remembering, Eric Liddell is even better remembered for the race he did not run. He had been born and brought up in a missionary family in China and early on showed his remarkable sporting ability. He had been chosen to represent Britain in the 100 yards at the 1924 Paris Olympics, but when he learned that the heats were to be run on a Sunday, he refused to compete, because of his strong Christian belief that the Sabbath belonged to the Lord and was sacrosanct. Although Liddell had proved himself repeatedly over the short sprint, he was also pretty formidable over the longer sprint of 220 yards. No one was quite sure how good he might be over the killer sprint of 440 yards, with none of his times anywhere near the Olympic record. But in spite of that, Eric Liddell pulled on the British vest for not only the 220 yards, but also the 440 yards in Paris in early July 1924. Happily for Great Britain, Harold Abrahams ran away with the gold medal in the 100 yards, and 2 days later, Eric Liddell worked his way through to the heats of the 220 yards to the final, where he took the bronze medal behind the American flyer Jackson Schultz, who won in a time which equaled the Olympic record of 21.6 seconds. There was no rest, though, for Eric Liddell, who had to run the heats for the 440 yards the following day. In one of those heats, a Swiss runner broke the world record. The next day, Eric surprised everyone by winning his semi-final in a personal best time. Less than 3 hours later, Liddell lined up in the outside lane to the sound of the pipes and drums of the Queen's Own Cameron Highlanders. He had no one beyond him to help judge the pace. When the starter's pistol cracked, Liddell set off at speed and, to everyone's surprise, did not slow down. Instead, he drew further ahead of a world-class field and claimed the gold medal in a world record time of 47.6 seconds. He had been inspired by a note handed to him before the race, quoting from Samuel in the Old Testament, "Them that honour me, I will honour." After that, Eric Liddell went back and served as a missionary in China, where he died in a Japanese concentration camp in 1945 at the age of 43, a very great sporting hero, as well as a memorable Christian, who is still honoured a century later.
We're nearing the end of this week's programme. It just remains for me to thank our contributors, Elizabeth, Bob, Penny and Jenny for the news, Jilly for the radio listings, and Sarah and Rebecca for the audio-described TV listings.
Jenny wrote Today in History, which Sue and I read, while TNF Soundings provided the 10 Today exercises. Rupert Evershed read his nature notes, and Alistair told us about Eric Little at the 1924 Olympic Games. Next week, Steve will be here with News Extra, but that's all from me in July 2024. We close with Jeremy North playing Summer Rain. I do hope you enjoy it. Goodbye for now, and do look after yourselves.